So we get to spend the rest of the time in what I like to title as the advanced portion. So you guys now have the basics down, and I want to talk a little bit more about the strategies of how to think about your values and how to use them against your opponent. So the step one I like to title, Know Thyself. In other words, a lot of people like to think of the value as just, I can pick any value and run with it. And while that's certainly the case, it's important to know your own priorities. What are your personal qualities? What are the things that you tend to value, that you get excited about? And then also know the value. What are the properties of your value? What are the benefits of it? What are the possible abuses of it? And you want to find ones that are matching. The reason for that, the reason that you want to find a value that really matches who you are, something you can be excited about, is because when you're excited about something, you end up convincing the judge a whole lot more. So for me, like my first year, justice was something that I was really excited about because I was reading some different things about law. I've always been kind of interested in going for my legal degree, and that was really exciting for me. Cheyenne gets excited more about the more extrinsic values, if you will. She likes to run values that are things like economic stability or economic functionality. To her, those are a lot more exciting than the really fluffy, what she refers to as fluffy values, values that have a lot of emotion but aren't really as concrete and down to real world. So you just need to know what are the ones that you tend to prefer. And Know Thyself, of course, I suppose we should give credit to Socrates for that quotation. But so start with knowing your value. You want to know if your value is more narrative or more factual in basis. This kind of comes down to, is it more, both are logical. That's not like having a more narrative, story-based value is worse, and having more factual value is better. Both of them are important, and both of them are going to affect different audiences differently. So is yours more narrative or factual? Second of all, is yours more timeless or specific? So that kind of deals with the whole resolutionality issue that we're dealing with. Is yours a value that tends to be applicable to virtually every resolution that comes out, something like human rights? Or is this value something that's really specific to the consideration at hand? So if you're having a debate about the Fed, you could have a value of lower interest rates. You can't really have a value of lower interest rates if you're having discussion about moral standards versus freedom of speech. I'm sure there's a way, but that's not going to be a winning strategy most of the time. So is your value more timeless or specific? The third one is, what is your value going to do for you? Is the focus going to, in other words, is the focus going to be on your value or is it going to be elsewhere? Some debaters are very focused on the values and they really like the value clash and debate a lot there. Other debaters prefer the debate over applications. They like the evidence. They like to bring in their PhDs dealing with the Rwandan genocide and describing the causes for it and that type of a thing. So you want to ask yourself, what is it that I'm trying to get out of value? Am I trying to get a general value that's going to allow me to move on to the applications? Or do I want a value that has a lot of depth that's going to require more explanation that I'm a lot more excited about? And the fourth one is, do you like to argue against your opponent's value, or do you like to complement it? Now, this is something that Cheyenne threw into it, because the idea of having your value complement your opponent's is something that I absolutely abhor. But the point is, some people like running their value in such a way where they accept their opponent's value. So if their opponent has value like human rights, and they have a value, say, of stability, they'll accept their opponent's value usually and run their value as a criterion or a way of achieving their opponent's value. So you just have to know that about yourself. Do I like making my value have clash with my opponent's value and make my judge pick my value over theirs? Or do I genuinely like to reduce the value clash and accept their value, accept their premises, and debate from those standpoints? To sum all of that up, the point is you want to know yourself. And when I say know yourself, that includes knowing not only your personal preferences, what's worked really well for you in the past, but also know your value and make sure that it's all feeding into that. So the second step is, I like to title, Know Your Strengths. And here I have kind of two sub-points under this. So not just know your preferences, but know your strengths and know the strengths of your value. First of all, you have to ask, where is your value uniquely better? And that was the exercise that we were going through earlier when you came up with four pieces of the RTP shell. A reason why your value is perhaps more moral, why it's has more societal benefits, why it's more consistent, and or why it's more resolution specific. So let's talk through those ones that you came up with, because that's going to kind of, by having you guys do that, hopefully you can kind of be teaching yourself what I'm trying to communicate to you, which is the benefits of the value. So I'm just going to start off with what I did. I was doing equality before the law versus national security. I don't know why I came with equality before the law, but anyways. So for the first one of the moral benefit, I had less instances of abuse. In other words, this would be a more application-centric argument. You would want to have some applications to back it up. But I was just thinking through the fact that, sure, you could have a bad value that is equally applied to everyone, but there are fewer instances of that happening where a bad law was equally applied to everyone, including the people applying it, than instances where national security was used to justify, other types of atrocities. My second one, in terms of societal benefit, I was just thinking, perhaps that society is less militaristic. Would you rather have a society that's, obviously every society should value national security. They have to. But would you rather have a society that builds itself on national security, or a society that builds itself on equality before the law as being the founding tenet of it? I think most of us would probably say equality before the law, and the reason is that it's not that national security is bad, but because it's an extrinsic value, definitely, when it becomes an end in and of itself, it's more likely to be abused. The third was just the definition is more objective. There's a lot of different views of what it means for national security to be enforced. Does it mean protecting from outside? Does it mean protecting from inside? How are we going to achieve that? Whereas equality before the law is pretty much equality before the law. It means that all the values are being applied equally. So in that sense, it's more of a consistent value. The fourth one, I defined that moral stand, and I'm once again viewing this from the STOA resolution because I mostly coach for STOA, but moral standards depend on equality, not security. In other words, you can look at a society can have moral standards without having national security, but it can't really have moral standards without having some type of equality in the way that those standards are enforced. So it's it leads to a better, fuller clash between freedom of speech and moral standards when we're looking at an equality before the law type perspective. So that's what I've got. So now, moving toward the last step that I titled Play to Your Strengths. So you know yourself, you know what's up with your values, characteristics, is it intrinsic or extrinsic, is it obtainable or unobtainable. Then we dealt with its strengths, looking at those four types of reasons to prefer. So hopefully, and keep thinking through these, try to come up with, say, four strengths to your value. Lastly, I want to talk about how to use those strengths to your best advantage, how to make the judge care more about it. And that's where really the theme of this lecture that you saw on the opening slide comes in. And if the people were here last year, they remember I ended up playing the video for it. Maybe if we have a time at the end, we'll go ahead and do that as well. But I like to think of Scotland as kind of in their war with England as a metaphor for this. And the reason is that when Scotland ended up going to war with England, if you ever watched Braveheart, you know all about this, well, via a very somewhat fictionalized account of it. But the point is that they did not have the advantages that the English army did. First of all, they didn't have any heavy cavalry. And at the time, it had been literally 300 years since a major battle had been won against an opponent that had heavy cavalry, and they had not. They were getting ready to face the opponent, and the last one was actually the Battle of Tours between the French and the Moors when the Moors were invading. They had their cataphracts, and the French really didn't have any type of heavy cavalry. But that's another story for another day. So one might initially think that there was no possible way for the Scots to win. The chances were absolutely outnumbered. But the Scots, in spite of not having really any armor of any type, and not having any heavy cavalry, they still did have some advantages. Namely, that they were insane. They were scary. The English were scared of these peasants that were wielding axes and would run into battle scantily armored in many instances, not naked like the Britons, but scantily armored, and were really just willing to do anything that mattered to fight for their nation. So they excelled at hand-to-hand combat, whereas the English excelled at things like their archers, their longbowmen, and their cavalry. So what the Scots ended up doing, now you won't get all of this if you just watch the movie, what they really ended up doing is they were, before the battle, they went and did everything they could to reduce the strengths of the opponent's heavy cavalry. They dug pits with stakes in them. They scattered the battlefield with caltrops, which are these spikes that would cripple the enemy horses. They made tar fields that would slow the opponents, and they built them in different places where the enemy charge, once they realized this, had to be filtered into certain areas, and because they all had to come through these certain passable areas, by the time the enemy cavalry got to them, they were hardly even at a trot. They weren't at a full gallop because they were having to deal with all of these things that had been littered in front of them. Once they even made it to the Scots met them with a hedgerow, a three men deep of just spears twice the length of a human. And when they were able to sit there and withstand the charge from the enemy, planting their spears completely, it ended up negating the strength of the enemy's heavy cavalry. The first charge was skewered upon all of these long spears, and the enemy knights ended up having to dismount to engage their opponents, which negated the advantage of them. And in spite of having superior odds, the Scots ended up winning the Battle of Stirling. So, I say all of that as not only because it's really inspirational to me personally, but because I think it's a kind of good metaphor to think about how your value is. Now, every year, there's that value that just seems unbeatable. That everyone's running, using human dignity, or everyone's using freedom, or everyone's using privacy. Whatever may seem like the unbeatable value, there is no unbeatable value. Now, if you play against their value, where their value is strong, you're going to lose. So what is the strength of justice is probably in its moral benefits. The moral benefits of valuing it versus possibly the social benefits. Whereas something like, financial stability definitely has its forte on the social benefits side. Or maybe you have a very specific value where its forte is the fact that it's very specific to this resolution. What I'm trying to tell you is, if your value is strong in one area, and your opponent's value is strong in another, don't make your reason to prefer anything to do with the strength of their value. If you fight them on their ground, and you fight them where their value is strong, you're going to lose every time. You need to figure out what are your strengths and play to it. So, let's talk about using that idea of the Scots, if you will, having their strength being hand-to-hand combat and forcing their opponent to fight them there. Let's apply that to the values arena, specifically looking at the values that you guys came up with in an exercise. So I'm going to start with my own. Equality before the law. We talked about moral benefits, social benefits, fickleness or consistency, and lastly, it not being a standard. So when I'm looking at comparing equality before the law to national security, what one do you think would probably be the strength? Actually, don't answer that question. What one do you think is the strength of national security?
Between all the four?
All four of those.
Social
benefits? That's what I was thinking. I was definitely thinking the social benefit side of national security. So I'm going to grab my pen and go ahead and cross that one out right now. I'm not going to talk about social benefits. So if we deal with that, I'm likely to, my opponent's going to have three reasons to prefer if he wants that are all going to be superior to mine. What's the weakness of equality before the law, would you say?
Social.
Yeah, so it's already crossed out, so that makes it pretty easy. The social benefits of equality before the law, first of all, we just don't have a lot of data because there haven't been a lot of societies where the laws were equally enforced.
You could also argue fickleness.
Fickleness, consistency. I would say probably consistency is an issue for equality before the law as well, just because it depends on the laws that are being applied equally. So let's cross that one out. So what we're left with here are, is it more applicable to the resolution or the moral benefits? I'm probably going to go with the moral benefits side, because while it is certainly more applicable probably to the community moral standards side, when it comes to freedom of speech, neither of them are super applicable. So I'm going to go with the moral value one, but honestly, either one of those would have been pretty good. So, moral benefits on my side. So how am I going to win the debate between my opponent and I? Well, first of all, you're going to use that reason to prefer. That, I mean, that's obvious. You're going to use the reason to prefer that is the weakness of that strikes a balance between being weak on your opponent's side and strong on your side. However, it's not just about that. You also have to implant in the idea of the judge, essentially, how are they going to choose between two different values, not just a reason to prefer. You almost need a value for the values. You need to decide, how are we going to evaluate between two different values? And really, in this case, if you're doing a moral benefit side, morality is, to use Travis's term, Travis Hirsch, if you're not familiar with him, you were just in Texas, he likes to call it a super value. I think that's an unnecessary piece of jargon personally that you don't need to teach your judge. But if you want to, by all means, use super value. But the point is, you want to implant in the judge's mind, morality is how we should determine between these two different values. You set that up in cross-examination, how you're going to differentiate between the two values. You straight up ask your opponent on the value argumentation side, and we'll be talking more about this on the prescripted cross-ex. If you can get a prescripted cross-ex on this, that's great. But if not, just think through this. Ask your opponent, if you had a choice between benefiting the economy and upholding that which is morally right, which would you do? It's going to take one gutsy opponent to tell you, I would rather take a 5% increase over GDP at the expense of innocent children. Like, they're not going to say that type of a thing, right? And obviously they're also not going to really see the harm behind, sure, we need to have morality, but my value is moral, because they didn't listen to this lecture and they didn't realize that while certainly there's a moral aspect to their value, it's their weakness. Unless you're debating each other, in which case you're just going to have a really awesome debate round. But the point is, you want to get them to admit in cross-examination that the way we choose between values should be on the moral aspects of that, and you bring that into your reason to prefer. Now, you can always do this, regardless if you're affirmative or negative. Think about it. The affirmative is going to bring up their reason to prefer in the first affirmative rebuttal, right after they got out of cross-examination. And the negative is going to bring this up in their very first speech, which comes right after their cross-examination. So this is a tool that you can always use, regardless of your affirmative or negative. So this is a little secret, if you will, that I use during debate that I realize I've never even shared with my my students. I would always have a little, almost always, have a little question in there that was kind of snuck in there about the value. I didn't do a good enough job of bringing that into my reason to prefer, generally speaking. I wish I had done a better job of that. But I would definitely go after how do we determine which value is better, or have some question that kind of sneaks in there under the radar, if you will, to deal with that topic. To give you the three, I kind of formulated the three sub-points of play to your strengths just to sum up what we've been saying. First of all, pick the ground. So pick the issue. Pick the type of reason to prefer that you want your judge to be looking at. So pick the ground. And I like to think of that as, you know, scattering the caltrops, digging the pits with the stakes at the bottom, force your opponent to bait you on your ground. Second of all is define the narrative. You do this in your tags. Have tags with your values that are crafted to highlight that side. So if it's a moral side, include the word moral or right or something like that as one of your four or five words in your tag. If it's benefit, include benefit or economy or well-being or some type of effective word to communicate that. Or how, if you're doing consistency, just say consistency. More consistent, something like that. Use your tags to define the narrative. And we'll be talking more about this later, but those little tags, those little words, the words that are being preferred over other words, are the ways that you make your judge think about it without even realizing it. They'll all of a sudden, just by looking at their flow, say, oh yeah, this one is more moral. I guess I'm going to go with that. By using effective words, you can kind of implant those ideas in your judge's mind even better. And the last one is I like to title Route the Enemy. I title this Cross Apply. If you do an effective job of this with your value, you can cross apply that to their entire case. You could make, if you wanted, a value argument the entirety of your only case. So if their value is focusing on the moral side, you can bet that the entirety of their case is going to have that moral aspect to it. So if you were, you can make that cross-apply to their arguments and say that this, so say their value is justice, and you're arguing that the strength of societal benefits is that perhaps they're less subject to abuse. Talk about, well, you and I would agree that such and such application of human trafficking was unjust. The people engaged in it probably either aren't concerned about justice, or they would disagree with you and think that it's completely proper that for one person to use another in that way. So instead, Judge, we need to look at this through the lens of societal benefits. And if we look at it through the lens of societal benefits, we can see that really economic security is more important than personal freedom, something like that. So if you do an effective job of this, this value argumentation can apply to the entirety of their case. So, pick the ground, define the narrative, route the enemy, and you will beat your opponent in a value argumentation every time.